Welcome to the ISF podcast from the Information Security Forum, featuring timely conversations, practical insights, and resources for global cybersecurity professionals. I'm your host, Tavia Gilbert. Today, ISF CEO Steve Durbin is in conversation with Adam Rumenek, founder and CEO of Auxmode, a company specializing in digital rights management, content strategy, and IP protection. Adam and Steve discuss the challenges of protecting content and intellectual property, how organizations can manage their risk, and what to do if your content is compromised.
So this is a topic area that I've been wanting to get into for quite some while, the whole issue of sort of content protection, digital rights management, that kind of thing. Mainly, I guess, because so many of us now are partly down to the pandemic, but so many of us are focused on getting our messages out electronically, whether that be on Instagram, whether it be on Facebook, or whether it be on blogs or our websites and so on. And so I really wanted to understand from you, what are some of the challenges that people should be aware of when it comes to content protection today in the sort of space that we're currently operating in?
That is a very big question.
and we've only got 20 minutes.
Right. Well, you know, Auxmode focuses on the digital rights management protection, specifically in the streaming world. I can't speak for everything, but I do understand, you know, maybe a bit of history. If you remember Napster and they unfortunately peer-to-peer network poured a lot of audio content without gaining the intellectual property rights for distribution. Well, YouTube came along and it's video-based, yet it is the largest audio site in the world. More people listen to audio on YouTube than they do watch video. But that being the case, people upload these files to YouTube and say Facebook and don't have the rights to do it. You know, I like the movie Avatar, but I have nothing to do with building the movie or producing the movie. Yet if I took a little clip of that movie and uploaded it to YouTube, well, unfortunately, we refer to that in a nice way. It's called misuse. That's a really nice way to say that you took it without a license. What Auxmode does is help protect that content. And in this world, via email, text, you can send actually audio file or video file via text now. People are sending stuff that they don't have the rights to do. And corporations and individual producers put all their time and effort making this content, and people just send it back and forth without the rights to do that. They're no distributors or producers. So the benefits that we bring to the table is we help those distributors, studios, producers, even brands these days create a lot of content, protect their content from theft. And we work on the bigger platforms. Unfortunately, there's a lot of the stuff going on the dark web that we stay away from. And a lot of those smaller video-based websites that come and go as people send them an email to take their stuff down. But the majority of the world is on YouTube. It is right. The largest video sharing site in the world. And our focus is to help them, not just educate them in security and why they should do this, but unfortunately, if they get hacked, like what happened with Sony years ago in the movie The Interview, unfortunately, they didn't have any measures and then they fixed it after the fact. But our job is to hopefully get there before that happens.
Right. And how do you do that?
There's multiple ways, but a company like Alphabet, which owns YouTube, works with this piece of software called Content ID to keep it very simplistic. It's almost like a fingerprint. Each video or audio file has a unique fit, you know, fingerprint. Yep. And it can, if it's like a 60 minute or 120 minutes, you know, it breaks it down into seconds or minutes or hours, whatever. And if somebody uploads that fingerprint or that film or TV show, we look for matching ones in the entire database of YouTube. And then we take it down or we exercise the IP rights worldwide or by region. Unfortunately, what would be smart for studios if they, I have no idea why it always happens this way, but if they, as they make these films before they, you know, launch them in theaters and people can take their iPhones and record it and then trade it or sell it or send it to their friends, we can actually protect it before it goes for distribution. But we can't teach everybody everything all the time. We share the knowledge. We believe that as soon as you create content, protect it right away, if it's audio or if it's video. And then, you know, that'll help in the future if there's a serious event where, unfortunately, your organization gets hacked or somebody just uses their cell phone at a Coldplay concert or a Disney release in the theaters, that it's protected before it happens. And that is really the way I recommend everybody do it, as opposed to us getting a phone call or an email saying our film's up on YouTube and we're trying to sell it in worldwide or whatever country they work in.
Right. So what does happen? What recourse does an organization have if their copyright material is stolen online? So let's stick with that example. So, you know, somebody has been in a theater, they've recorded, I don't know, No Time to Die, something like that, you know, which is one of the biggest films that we've seen for the last 2 years because we haven't been able to produce anything. Where does the organization go? Where does the studio go? What does it do?
Yeah, I'd like to do real life examples as well. So what would happen in this event if it was taken and it was uploaded to YouTube, we'll stick with a, you know, big video sharing site. The likelihood of them getting hold of YouTube is very low. Like people aren't answering phones. There's not enough people in the world to do that. Right. So, you know, there are companies like us who do this kind of work, who've been doing it for a very long time in the industry. And, you know, I've traveled the world doing this kind of stuff and speaking about it. They can come to us and we can just easily take that film and block it from the platform. If it was stolen that quick, we would seriously work very fast to get that down and fortify it so it's not taken from YouTube to other platforms. But unfortunately, you'd have to get a hold of the platform, be it YouTube or Facebook or Hulu or Roku or Spotify if it's audio only, because these companies are taking in so much content. I think on YouTube, it's about 500 or 700 hours a minute get uploaded.
Wow.
It's a lot of AI machine learning that helps do this work. But if in a real life example, it's pretty hard to catch. Mm-hmm. As soon as you catch it, somebody else will modify it and put it up. These people who do this type of misuse are quite clever on how they do it. It keeps us in business. lots of tricks of the trade where even this call that you and I are on, we can invert it where everything looks the same and sounds the same, but it's a bit inverted or a bit hazy, and it tricks the system. You know, we're aware of a lot of the tricks, but I think globally people know that YouTube's pretty much a free platform. Working within the platform rules, a lot of these corporations are now, especially since a couple of years ago when Sony got hacked with that movie, The Interview, and, you know, unfortunately COVID expedited this whole process. They've taken streaming platforms quite seriously. I mean, Disney didn't have one 2 years ago. Now they have over 100 million monthly subscribers. The writing's on the wall that it's not going anywhere.
Right.
The problem's here. There's more platforms than ever, and people gravitated towards streaming, especially since movie theaters got closed. And I'm a bit older, and Seinfeld's now on Netflix, and I'm rewatching Seinfeld in 2021, and it's a hit. So these platforms and corporations are now managing this type of risk in part of their business model.
So when we talk about managing that risk, what are some of the key things that organizations can do in that space? Because one of the things you mentioned right at the start was that organizations themselves, as so not studios, not people who produce this stuff for a living, but organizations that are producing perhaps their own film clips, audio clips, like I do with the podcast, for instance, they're also potentially at risk. So what are the sorts of measures, steps that people can take to protect the IP before they put it up?
That's a great question. Clips, best dubs, compilations. We believe that you can protect the whole episode. You don't have to upload the clip to protect the clip. If the entire episode is protected and you have a strategy by uploading the full episodes to these platforms on private, because maybe you have your own app for streaming, or if it's video, maybe you have your own video platform, or maybe everything's going through some podcast aggregate corporation. But as long as you have a strategy to upload your content on private to these other platforms and then protect it against the likelihood of misuse by third party uploading it, then you can actually block it worldwide. And then say for this podcast, for instance, you didn't have an audience in some country that you were looking for an audience that you obviously knew they were using YouTube or another platform, maybe release it in that area because they don't have access to this podcast streaming app that you created, or they just don't want to download it or something. So there are different business strategies that we like to bring to the table when dealing with corporations or organizations that they need to understand. You know, like the Joe Rogan show or something like that is massive on YouTube, yet Spotify bought it. They kept it on YouTube. They didn't get rid of it on YouTube. They just have multi-platform distribution now. And the reason is YouTube is so big. And we believe they're protecting it on YouTube and pushing people to you know, Spotify, because they did buy it. But the idea is to defend on all platforms to make sure that you control your assets or your IP from theft or misuse. As long as you have a strategy, you're going to mitigate the risk of theft. You know, it's the old 80-20 rule. We'll do everything we can to protect it. But there's a lot of platforms coming that, you know, we didn't see 3 months ago or 3 years ago. There's 81 different platforms as of spring 2021 that we track. That's a lot. There was like 20 2 years ago.
Right. So it's continuing to grow is the point. What is it that some of the best corporations that you work with are doing that you think are really setting them apart in terms of, you know, digital rights protection? You know, if we were to sit down and say these are the top five things that really are up there as being prime examples of good practice in this space.
There's always potential for more before we get into a discussion like this, because we're always trying to stay one step ahead. But what we're finding is some of the companies that we deal with, we realize that we can't stop everything, potential right. threat theft. So what an organization can do to better protect their IP is work within the tools and the rules of the platform. And then maybe during the course of understanding the platform and how all that works, opportunities will present itself, which leads me to a new part of this conversation is insights. Mm-hmm. So what we're seeing is if you, you know, protect it, track it, block it where you need to block it, but always track everything, because it's very hard to be 100% in the business that we're in. But once you start tracking it all, which you can track it all, then you find out insights about your audience that will help not only better your future content you're creating by tracking your existing portfolio, but it'll also mitigate the type of risk that you can, you know, unfortunately, when creating content itself, you know, not everything is going to be a Seinfeld episode or a Seinfeld TV series or a James Bond movie. So what happens is not only are you protecting it, but you potentially are able to build better content for the future by letting the content go on the platform to the public and then understanding your audience and then moving your future storytelling or, you know, showrunners who create these types of films and TV shows to better create content based on your audience. And that is taking a threat and then turning it into a strategy to help your future business model. And you can see a great example of this when Netflix comes out with Netflix Originals or Amazon Originals. They literally own the platform and are reading the data on the platform and then creating content based around the audience within that platform. And they have many different metrics or data sets that they read to better understand what they should be creating. And they know this better than anybody. And, you know, the real world example is when you go to Costco and you buy Kirkland. Why are they creating that product at Costco? Well, they're reading the cash register. Mm-hmm. You know, it happens all over the place at all these multinational corporations. But what we're seeing is if you can't mitigate everything, so you might as well take the risk, go on these platforms, streaming's here, help stop the potential threats, yet take the data sets from those threats, understand your audience better, and then move forward by creating content that your audience will want to watch. Inevitably, and I'm speaking from a revenue point of view right now, you'll create more revenue for your corporation with less content from knowing all these data sets. You know, the potential you will get, you're never going to stop this. You can't mitigate 100%. So if you have a strategy, as I was saying before, you can end up creating a better revenue for a corporation, which is, you know, especially if it's a public company, you have an obligation to do. So these larger corporations are doing exactly that. And that's why we're seeing these platforms launch, like Disney. Fox is building out one as well. And it's just such an advantage for them in the long run. Short term, it might seem kind of odd to find the content agnostic beyond 10 different platforms. But in the long term, they're collecting your information and creating a very large amount of content based on, from a revenue perspective, based on what they should create from that perspective. It's a very long-winded answer, but it gives you, you know, it's a rather difficult question to answer, but it gives you two sides. And a lot of times we have to think of everything from a corporate standpoint.
Yeah, sure. And I think it's interesting that point you make that there is actually a lot to be learned. And clearly some of these big multinationals are looking at how they can do that and take advantage of it. Looking forward, Adam, the future of IP protection, what do you think that is going to look like? Because we've just been talking about some of the changes that are taking place, some of the growth that is going on in this particular space. What's the future of IP protection going to actually look like, do you think?
For corporations, I think it's going to get easier, faster, and better. What took hours that we do in seconds today will take less than a second in the future. But right. They're going to start protecting everything, images, actually still images, stuff that we never thought was possible years ago is already possible. AI and machine learning are going to make everything, you know, not perfect, but it's going to make it faster and easier. I do think we're going to be able to protect ourselves. That's a, you know, a moonshot idea, but why couldn't we protect ourselves? Currently, there is no system based on every platform in the world that we can do that, but somebody will, if not already is, going to solve that problem. It's not just about the corporations because they're getting better at it. It's about everybody. And I hope one day we get there. And I, you know, it's not just hope. I do believe we're there. Somebody's going to do something where we can protect ourselves, not just these companies about, you know, the potential threats of content theft. I just think they're going to start reading more data. And as you and I walk down the streets with our mobile phone and our GPS and the ad change at our public transportation, because they're reading us, we should be able to stop that and protect that. Our IP should not just be about audio and video rights. We should protect our own self. And that kind of future thinking, these platforms are working on it, but you hear a little, you know, in the forums and blogs that I read, you hear rumblings of that because we're getting really good at it.
Right.
We're getting extremely efficient about stopping digital rights theft. Mm-hmm. And brands are becoming content powerhouses. If you look at GoPro and, you know, Red Bull, these guys create more content than anybody these days. And right. They have to deal with the same issues that Hollywood and company has to deal with. And above all, gaming is just a whole world in itself. And these kids are recording themselves on Twitch and uploading it. And yet I don't think they own Call of Duty.
Right.
And, you know, and Grand Theft Auto, these are very large followings and millions of users every day. Yet, you know, if you go on Twitch, they're recording themselves live and uploading it. I don't really think that is the point of the game. I mean, I understand it and it's fun to see. But as these corporations learn to protect their theft, I think that the future is, you know, it's going to spill all over to the public, which I think is great. Because just like your show here and me personally walking down the street and somebody taking a picture of me, I don't want that. I don't want the threat of somebody taking that picture and misusing it, going online and doing whatever they or he or she does. And it's the same as your show. It should be protected. You own the show.
Right. And one of the things we haven't touched on in all of this, of course, is the role of regulation. What sort of a role do you think that has to play? I mean, you know, I'll give you my sort of 10 cents on it. I think my stance has always been that regulators are always going to be late to the party because they like to regulate based on what has gone before rather than trying to be forward-looking. And maybe that's a rather jaundiced view, but what is the role that you think the regulators can play in this, if at all?
Well, when I was younger, I felt nothing, but at my stage, they deserve a role. And I realized change, you know, as you get more into the industry and learn more, I realize it does take time. I think government and regulators, they need to be at the table. It was kind of embarrassing when you saw Facebook testify in Congress and they really had no idea how he made money, or at least one congressman.
Yeah.
And it's unfortunate that maybe certain regulators don't understand the business as well. Maybe you need a third party of somebody who can step in or some sort of consultants that can help. But I think the platforms must do this themselves today to the best they can. Obviously, these large corporations are public, so they do have a fiduciary duty to make money and not put roadblocks in front themselves that will hinder that. But as we saw with the Facebook hack a couple of years ago, where they took all of our information, were able to send us ads and change the world. And
right.
I think both sides need to work together. It's going to take time as much as we want it to happen quickly. But then I looked at the Olympics this past summer and they did a great job with letting the world see the Olympics for free online. And there is potential there. It does need to be regulated, maybe time delay or something in case something terrible happens during the live event, which you see in Facebook Live. But I think regulators need to focus and work with us in third party as well as platform as fast as they can. This game moves very quick. You just look at how fast Disney became a powerhouse online, and they didn't have anything 2 years ago. It's going to keep on happening. That's the problem. And as soon as you think you can protect it, it changes. The Digital Millennium Copyright Act is over 20 years old, hasn't been updated since 1998. That's kind of ridiculous. This is, you know, at the beginning of streaming. And 20 plus years later, we're still dealing with electronic files just on mobile devices instead of CPUs being traded. And, you know, I'm able to get any music I want for free, yet I don't. I pay everybody and have multiple monthly fees I pay these streaming platforms. I would love to see regulators work together, but I think it needs to be EU and North America. It can't be one for the EU and one for North American and one for, you know, APAC region, whatever region in the world. It needs to be global, like the DMCA. You can't just do this country by country, because you're just, in the end, you're going to anger the end user. And the end user is the one that kind of calls the shots, unfortunately. We might regulate right, left, and center. Platforms might try. But if the user base leaves, they'll find another way to do this. The one thing that every user wants is free. Mm-hmm. Figure out how to regulate under the free model. And that'll be sufficient for the platform and for the user. That'll be great. Likelihood of that happening is pretty low, though.
It's a pretty good challenge to leave our listeners with, though, isn't it, Adam? Thank you so much indeed for taking the time to share some of that insight into content, into some of the things that are happening in that particular space, and of course, giving us your take on regulation as well. Been a pleasure talking to you, Adam. Thanks very much indeed.
Thanks very much to this week's guest, Adam Rumenek. Next week, Steve and I come back to discuss his takeaways from the past four episodes.
All too often, security is brought to the party when the party's over. And so it's part of the cleanup crew rather than anything else. You know, the deal is done, and now we've got to try to figure out how we put these things together. That can't be the way that we go forward. Businesses are too dependent upon data, too dependent upon information that is being shared with third parties, too dependent upon the way in which they're accessing and moving data around within their own companies.
We'll be back for the full conversation in a week. In the meantime, is there a topic or question that you'd like us to cover in a future episode? Let us know at securityforum.org, which is also where you can find that catalog of past video and podcast episodes, as well as ISF's research, practical tools, and guidance related to discussions like today's. Follow us on LinkedIn by searching CEO Steve Durbin or Security Forum. Follow our audio feed wherever you get your podcasts so you never miss an episode. And if you like the ISF podcast, we'd love it if you'd write us a short review and if you'd rate the podcast. The ISF podcast is produced by Talkbox and Tavia Gilbert, with music by Alexander Filipiak, associate producer Katie Flood, mix and master by Brian Barney. Thanks for listening.